Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Today I am joined by one of my closest lifelong friends named Aaron Daniel. We talk about building a friendship based on being unoffendable, the tension of navigating a business based on sales well, and shifting our perspective in little ways that matter big. Let's dive in. It is so fun to have you today, Aaron, on this podcast because I'm just laughing that we met each other in our awkward freshman year of college trying to make new friends. And I remember hearing about this girl named Erin Canary and just being so excited to meet you. And so I just want to talk about really a long-term friendship and how has our friendship thrived through so many seasons and moves and challenges. And not that we have like cornered the market, but I do feel like there's been some things that we've learned over the past almost 20 years that I'd love to just talk about. So
yeah.
What are some of your thoughts?
That's a great question. You know, 20 years is quite a long time, Whit.
It really is.
You're in this like whole separate category in my life of friend.
Like, I know.
You know, but I think as you and I were talking about this, that's what makes us particularly special because we've walked through so many different seasons of life together. That I think that, you know, we have a lot of common groundwork there too, where we're pulling from in terms of, you know, walking through our early college years together and that huge life transition. Mm-hmm. And then you and I both, you know, you first, of course, but we both moved abroad and had our transitions there. And then now our families are in ministry in different ways. So I think that, with that regard, you have a very special place in my life because you have this more full picture of where I've been and similar to you, you know, that I can say the same about you. We walked through a lot of similar seasons.
It's so true. I think, so we lived together for the first, I guess it was actually our sophomore through our senior year of college, right? So really formative years. I know. And then, we've had many years where we haven't lived in the same country, in the same state. So we've had, you know, great distance and maybe get to see each other once every year at best. Sometimes it's more like once every couple years. But something that I was thinking about is just how incredibly powerful it is to not have unfair expectations of a friend that you hold dear. Because I really think that could have destroyed our relationship. I think back to times where we didn't, you know, we couldn't talk or we weren't able to, whether it was because of busyness or not even having, you know, internet capabilities or whatever. And so there were months when we couldn't connect. And so to kind of have that filter of looking at each other with, I trust that this person really does care about me, even if they're not reaching out or, you know, haven't called me recently. And so to really kind of lay aside some of those expectations of maybe what a quote unquote best friend should do or, you know, should, I don't know, just to, sometimes we have those expectations of how a friend should kind of meet our needs. And when we hold those really tightly, sometimes that can actually just erode the fiber of a friendship, you know? So,
yeah, I think that you and I mean, and I don't want to speak for you here, but I feel like there's always been a freedom in our friendship to be where we're at and an understanding there. You're exactly right. That creates this sort of safe space, to just pick up where we left off. And yes, to trust that, nothing has shifted in our relationship if we haven't heard from one another or kept up. I think that we can exactly like start right back where we left off.
Yeah, for sure. We've been talking about this in our Bible study recently about this word unoffendable. And it's kind of a word that, you know, it's not even actually a word if you look it up in the dictionary. But when you really think about it, it's a great space to be in. It's a great place for your heart to be in. If you're able to really not allow yourself to be easily offended, then what you're choosing to do is to trust and believe the best, give the benefit of the doubt, and also just to extend grace. And so I think that that's always been a gift that you've given me, is that, you know, I'm not fearful when I call you and it's been, you know, months maybe, and I haven't returned your call or something like that. Yeah. You know, I'm not fearful that I'm going to be met with, you need to explain yourself, or I'm really upset with you. But really, like, it's a warm hug and a, oh my gosh, I'm so excited just to hear your voice, you know? And so I think that's rare. I think that sometimes I've seen myself do that to other people, right? Where I can kind of become easily offended, or I've been on the end, you know, of realizing I'm offending someone, and it's just a, then you end up, you can sometimes be in a cycle in that friendship of, oh, I need to reach out to that person before they get mad at me, you know?
Sure, exactly.
Which is kind of terrible.
It is terrible.
I love thinking about that. But would you just give our listeners a little insight into your day-to-day now and what it looks like?
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, Whit, because I know that this is a very far cry from where we were, you know, back in our days at Georgia. And you know this, but now so my family and I, we live in a small town in Western North Carolina. And population-wise, the town is the size of my high school. So it's quite different. We have, you know, my husband's a pastor at our downtown Presbyterian church, and we've got three little boys who are 9, 6, and 4. Goodness.
So cute.
So it is a smelly and active and fun stage of life. I feel like I wear play clothes every day. Yes, every day is play here. So I am, you know, we have just loved digging into this small mountain town and loving our people and our community here. And again, it's so, so different, but in such a sweet way. It's been a really special place to raise our family and, again, like enjoy just God's creation. I mean, we're in the Smokies and we hike and bike and we are out and about, all the time, just enjoying our landscape here. And just, that's been really, again, a special part of living here. As you know too, I'm at home most of my days and I work part-time from home too. So it is a very fun and full season of life right now. That's for sure.
I love it. So you have a small business and we're going to just dive into this because we've had so many conversations about this, and your small business involves direct sales. And so this is something that people have all different reactions to and associations with. And in fact, you know, honestly, it was something that I was even a little hesitant about when you first shared it with me because of some not so positive experiences that I'd had in the past. And so let's just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm really glad and honored that you'd invite me to talk about this because it's, you know, a lot of my experience, but I'd love to sort of flesh this out a little bit with you more and with others, too. So I remember, and I'm glad you brought that up too, Whit, about, you're not so thrilled about, you know, me sharing this news with you, when I first got involved with my company, like, gosh, almost 4 years ago now, because I remember we were with our friends at the beach at the time, and you and I were we were taking a walk, and it was sort of this walk and talk situation. I know, you know, we have the best conversations when we walk together, but one of the things I remember you said to me during that walk was a word of caution that has stayed with me this entire time, and it was this. You said, don't ever treat people like capital. And you sort of named that caution there. And I think, you know, part of that, yes, was from your experience, but that was from coming from such a wise place, in, you know, and I received that wisdom from you, because I think that to a degree, we've all probably had those experiences where we've felt like icky or used, in one of those situations with direct sales for whatever reason. And, but I think you know, and we can go into this a little bit later, but one of the things I remember feeling at that time when I said yes to this particular opportunity was like, okay, I knew that I was linking arms with women who were mentors of mine, both in a ministry context and just in a life, you know, professional mm-hmm. context, who I loved and I trusted them. And so I had this imagination for there must be a better way right. to do this type of relational work. What would it look like to serve my community, my friends, through my work? And, you know, for us being Enneagram 2s, if anyone else is into the Enneagram, mm-hmm. Relationships are really what first drew me into this line of work. And I think that's also the piece that's like very foundational to why I do what I do.
And so even going back to that conversation we had on the beach, I was thinking about how that connects to what we mentioned earlier, just about our long-term friendships. So we had this trust that we were, you know, this foundational trust, right? That we knew we really deeply cared about each other and had invested so much time and energy into this friendship. And so because you've also always had this kind of unoffendable nature in our relationship and just kind of always invited in honesty, I think that definitely gave me the freedom to say, hey, can I be really honest with you about some of my thoughts and my reservations? And it, again, just created this space where we could have that. And it wasn't a threat to our friendship. And I knew that no matter what decision you made from that point on, that you would take it to heart, but you would also trust that my heart for you, and that was totally good. And so it ended up being a really good conversation to kind of talk openly about this throughout our friendship. So I know you, and I know that you care deeply about people and you do relationships so well and so intentionally. So how have you navigated this tension of prioritizing people over profit?
Sure. I've thought about this quite a lot. As you can imagine, prayed about this.
Yeah.
And you know, this like, and my company might be a little bit different here. We're sort of a direct retail model, so there's a couple different channels that we get through. Direct sales is one of them. But this particular model is one that hinges really entirely on relationships, because it is like you're creating a place of trust with your clients and with mm-hmm. your community and with your team. And when it's done rightly, I think it's this really beautiful picture of service. Serving one another, serving your communities. And it's people over profit every time. I think that the icky comes when these two priorities are out of order, right?
Right.
when profit comes over people. And I love, you know, this is a phrase from Andy Crouch, who's one of my favorite authors, if you've ever read his TechWise Family.
So good.
Or any of his other like culture making, like really good stuff. But he always uses this phrase I love. And it's, he talks about having things in their proper place. Mm-hmm. And I think it really helps us navigate the complexities of any given situation. Like in this case, running a business, there's a lot of different factors at play here, but how are these rightly ordered? And, you know, we certainly see this in scripture too. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. I think the same is true. We're thinking about running a business. It's really about people.
Yeah.
yes. What is the heart here? It's about people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, I have a pretty heavy social mission component to the company that I work with. And, you know, that we're a certified B Corp. We have a triple bottom line, people, planet, and profit. But even if, you know, because I think this could be applicable across the board, but even if your particular company might not have one of those, professionally speaking, I think you can still ask yourself the question, what's the real opportunity here? What is your why? And that's going to be different for everyone. Why are you pouring your heart into this work?
Right.
Why are you spending your time on this? And your answers are going to be different, but leaning into that why, I think is key for driving your path, how you go about your work. When you can answer those prayers or, you know, those questions through prayer and discernment, I think that the profit piece will follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, for sure. And at the end of the day, it is still a business. And part of the reason that I continue doing this work is because it provides an additional stream of income for our family. So I don't want to completely throw out the profit piece. Like, yes, we are called to do good work. And the Lord blesses our efforts in that, and we have fruit for our work. And part of that is going to be in the form of financial profit.
Right.
But the profit is tied to the sale of a product. You know, at its core, though, I think that I love really narrating that I feel like I'm in the business of empowering consumers, connecting with women, offering safer solutions for people, you know, much more the holistic view of, like, again, the why behind what I'm doing, what I do.
Absolutely. And I think we've talked about this as well in the past, that this, what you're describing, again, is a mentality of God is ultimately my provider. Mm-hmm. And so I am going to work to the best of my ability, and I'm going to do do my work with integrity. I'm going to put things in their proper place, like you said, and love people well, and then trust that God is going to provide the profit that I need to continue to make this happen and to support my family. So I know this has been a learning experience for you, and I remember you sharing a specific time a couple years ago, I think, when you saw how you had not done this well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I loved that I shared that with you too. I was like, here's all my failures. Here's how, and you know, honestly though, like you, I'm sure that you can relate though. And if you're listening to this, you can probably relate. I mean, I've probably done it wrong more than I've done it right.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're a broken people. Like, I'm going to get these priorities out of order. But that's okay. I think there's an opportunity there, right?
Yeah.
So I remember, you know, I had a conversation with a friend. I remember that I was reconnecting with after a long time, and I felt icky after it. Mm. I was like, nope, I got it wrong.
Yeah.
And I remember that I ended up, you know, calling this particular friend back and apologizing. And I said, I said to her, I got it wrong. And I apologize if I made you feel like this. I felt like this after our conversation, and I need you to hear that. And she was so gracious and receptive, but it really did. I think that was a best case scenario in terms of, like, I mean, I apologized, asking forgiveness, and like recognizing like, I'm going to try, and I'm sure I'm going to get it wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think in a lot of ways that experience helped me find my voice. Mm. And some of what worked and what didn't work for me, in terms of, you know, growing and thinking about the future of my business. It was very formative.
Yeah. That's great. I can relate in the sense of now, starting a nonprofit and there being such a huge need to do fundraising regularly. And so I'm always thinking about this, and how am I putting their relationships above the fundraising piece, right? And how there's a delicate balance there of sharing needs, sharing the vision, inviting people into the journey of just really carrying out this vision that God's given me, and not being, you know, ashamed to share that. But then not putting expectations on people that they are going to come through in the way that I think that they should to provide for this, you know, that again, ultimately God is the one who's going to provide, and I can rest in that first and foremost, right? I can rest in that. And then how can I go about this with integrity and really make it clear to people that I love you and I love you and I love you. And the piece of how you respond to this invitation to support this ministry has no bearing on our friendship or the well-being of our future friendship, you know? So I know that what you're selling is also not as important as encouraging wise decisions with what we have been entrusted. And I so often think of being challenged toward better stewardship when I think of you and just what you're passionate about. So let's talk a little bit about that, and maybe even how self-care comes in here.
Oh yeah, for sure. So I might talk about some books here that I love, that have been formative, but I mean, part of my linking arms with my company that I work with has been this huge, like very unexpected journey into a lot of like more intentional, thoughtful, consumer habits, but even more holistically, just like thinking about our stewardship, mm-hmm. how we care for what the bodies we've been given, our earth, you know, and what we're like passing on to our children. I mean, creation care, it's been sort of across the board, but, you know, one of the things I love, and, you know, knowing that I'm in the skincare business as well, is like, paying attention to these routines and rituals that bookend our days. Mm. Particularly, you know, spending time in front of the mirror, like brushing our teeth and like washing our face, and these really mundane, ordinary moments that can also, be very, very holy. Mm. And I think that, one of my favorite books is Liturgy of the Ordinary by Tish Harrison Warren, if you're familiar with that one. And she talks about everything from, you know, making your bed in the morning to, yes, brushing your teeth and washing your face and sort of beholding yourself in these moments and claiming them as holy. So one of the things I like to talk about is, yeah, having those times as you're, you know, using products or just spending time at the end of your day, like taking that moment in front of the mirror to have a breath prayer or a gratitude practice, you know, as you're like washing your face and really caring for your body. And, you know, I think, I'm assuming you would say this would be true with as well, but especially during a pandemic, right? This is especially true that now more than ever, I feel like part of what I'm tasked with or that God is calling me to do is to help women consider how the choice, these everyday, seemingly small choices that we make affect our mind, body, and spirit, and even how we're caring for our created world. Mm. And you know, self-care goes so far beyond like putting on a face mask and cucumbers on your eyes and like going and getting a massage. Right. I mean, this is like one version of self-care. It is so much more richer, so much richer than that. And so I think that, and it's, you know, far beyond even using products or considering like the ingredients that are in your products and how they're sourced, but in terms of sustainability and practices, you know, switching from plastic to glass and ethical business practices, how certain ingredients are sourced. Mm-hmm. I think that I have noticed a large shift in myself of treating my purchases as investments rather than expenses. Like if you think about reframing our dollars as casting votes into a ballot box, like for the kind of world that we want to see. So maybe that means choosing to support small businesses or businesses that you know who are really making efforts to have fair wages or, you know, fair trade. Like all, you can go a million directions with this, but I think that's just a little piece into what this particular journey has taught me about stewardship.
Yeah. I love thinking about just even the moments that are sometimes, just we don't even think about them, you know, brushing our teeth, washing our face, those things that can be moments even where we're giving thanks to the Lord of, God, thank you for giving me teeth, you know. Yeah, I know. Thank you that I have these teeth that you've given me that I get to eat food and enjoy really good queso or what.
Oh, exactly.
Not always the healthiest food, but even just I think even that, like washing my face and thinking about, God, thank you for this day. Thank you for just even this running water that I know is a luxury. Like never would I never take for granted the things that are privileges. And would I use all the things that you've given me for your glory? And I know that, you know, I think it's just like it's a little, but it's a really big perspective shift, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, let's be real here. Like, at the end, well, whatever, wherever we are in this pandemic journey, I mean, I think as women and as moms in particular, just the physical taxing on our bodies that the last, like this last year has had on us is so tangible and so hard in a lot of ways. So this was like, and I'll be honest, I actually did this last night. Like I put on this mask because I was like, this is forcing me to slow down. Like I'm going to sit on my couch and breathe for 10 minutes and like make myself stop and be quiet. And that's, it's just a physical, it's one thing that I can do to say like, thank you. Like thank you, body. Like you did a really good job today. And Lord, I'm so grateful for this body that has carried me through this day.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's so true. Yeah. And I feel like we can be really hard on ourselves sometimes. I feel like I'm often saying to women, like, hey, you've got to give yourself some grace. You know, yeah. God has given you lots of grace, but you are not giving it to yourself, you know? Mm. And so this is a great tangible way, right? To be able to kind of give yourself grace and say, hey, let yourself take a breath right now and just kind of be and extend yourself some grace. So what are some of the things that you have learned as you've worked hard to grow a small business while being a wife and a mom of three young boys and having a husband in a ministry role? Share some of those things that you've learned with us.
Yeah, sure. And I imagine what you can relate to a lot of these too. I'm curious what you would say about this, but I think that similar to what I was sharing a minute ago, I think that we first have to name that just the hardships and the complexities of this past year in terms of mom burnout and grief and just feeling that like, Lord, like, I don't know how much more can be put on my plate right now. We feel, you know, and I think that's just across the board in terms of conversations that I'm having with women. It's like, I don't know how much more I can physically, you know, do at the end of a day. So that is real. That is palpable right now. And especially, you know, it's really interesting. I've never owned like a small business before, this particular one that I do now. And so it's so incredibly personal in a way that I didn't expect, because it's up to you, right? Like it is yours. And so, I mean, it's the Lord's, but it is in the term of like, you know, you, I put my whole heart into my work and the relational component is really high. So it can feel like there's a lot at stake, in terms of like for, you know, myself, I'm definitely prone to take things very personally if it's a, you know, if it's a no or if it's a whatever it might be, a comment that might be like, oh, that stung, or, you know, things that can, I can take things personally because inherently a small business is personal. So I think that in that way, one of the things that I've learned, and I have not learned this, I am learning. It is an active thing that I probably will never master, but is to set boundaries around my time that I sort of devote to my business and my mental time, right? Like my head, how much head and heart space I'm allowing this to take up. Mm. When do I turn this off? Because as small business owners, there is literally always something to do.
Absolutely. Yes.
The time. I know. Yes. Can you relate to that?
Yes, for sure. Well, I mean, and you know, Tim is also, he's self-employed. So I think when you don't have those 8-to-5 boundaries, then you can easily bring your work into at the dinner table and into, you know, 9 o'clock sitting on the couch. And it feels sometimes like you're never not working, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
So yes, I can completely relate to that. That's such a good encouragement.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is kind of a strange thing, but a lot of my, as we are in a time now that, we all are for the most part, like we have a phone, we're connected constantly and it's with us, you know, in our pocket or in our purse, like it's kind of always on us. I think that there's this weird, you know, like if I have my phone out, for example, it's like, am I working or am I doing social time or what am I doing when all of a sudden this one device is for a myriad, you know, so many different things. So I think that there, I can't underscore this enough about communicate with your spouse or partner about this. Mm. I think so many of my, if I can be transparent for a minute, are, you know, maybe harder conversations about my work has come when there's a miscommunication or misconception about, is this work time? Is this social time? Maybe I'm blurring the boundary there and I'm trying to do too many things at once. Am I cooking dinner or am I working? Oh, wait, I'm doing both. I should probably just focus on my task at hand, you know?
Yeah.
So really being, having to overly communicate when I need that space to walk away and be fully present with my work, or when I need to be, you know, totally off. And so, yes, communication.
Yes.
Above and beyond.
It's so good. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. I think that just thinking back to so many conversations that we've had of, you know, marital challenges, just tension has been a result of this, you know, of this, man, I didn't do that very well. I had some unfair expectations, right? Yes. And we didn't talk through some of these things. And so we were on totally separate pages, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I love that your reminder about the boundaries, because I think I've shared this at one point that God really led me, I think it was about a year and a half ago, it was during the season of Lent, to really find some times where I could be more boundaried with my phone and put my phone completely aside. And yes. It's still something that is something I haven't completely figured out, but I have tried to start turning off my phone every Sunday, and I don't always do it, to be honest with you. There are times when it's like I have something going on, or I have, you know, work or different things that distract, that I end up having to pick it up. But I really feel like I miss out on Sabbath when I don't do it. And I end up feeling almost like behind. And when I do actually turn off my phone and fully, you know, take, you know, maybe even full 24 hours, I feel like it's this beautiful reset, and I'm able to come back to everything I have for that week with fresh eyes and a renewed, you know, just kind of sense of purpose and why I'm doing what I'm doing. So
yes.
It's really so worth it. It's like those things of discipline and boundaries that create so much more freedom. The paradox there, you know?
I mean, Andy Crouch would be so proud of you right now.
We should just plug that book, Andy Crouch, like, Techwise Family.
I'm like thinking about like, oh, proper place. What? You're like yes. Bringing it full, bringing it yes. home, sister.
Yes.
Bringing it full circle.
We'll give you credit for that, Andy Crouch.
Yes.
Yes. If you have not read the book, The Techwise Family, that is a good one. We will plug it that is. Today. Talk
yes.
about some yes. hard questions. Man, that is a great resource for sure.
Yes. Yes. And get yourself a friend or mentor who's going to tell you and encourage you to turn your phone off.
Yes.
I loved that word from you. Mm-hmm. You need, you know, that is, it's so important to put that in its proper place and put, you know, technology does not control you. You control technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yes, proper place. Yes. Always.
Oh, friend, this has been so fun. We could talk for way too long.
Such a treat.
Yeah. Such a treat. Back to all the years of...
Oh, I love it.
Like rooming, matching bedspreads, right? All of the things.
Wow. I'm going to go find a picture next.
I know.
Can you put that in the show notes?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We need an old school one for sure.
We do.
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor.
Welcome to another episode of Strange People, Strange Questions. You ready for question number one?
I'm ready.
Okay, this one's a deep one. Going deep quick.
Lee.
What would you say are your greatest areas of weakness?
Ooh, that was kind of a trick question. I wasn't expecting that twist there. This feels
what
like
twist?
An interview. Just to have greatest area of weakness all in the same sentence is kind of like a little bit of a oxymoron, don't you think?
No. I mean, you could also say area that needs the most improvement.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay. Just the word great in there threw me out. Threw me out. That was weird. I mean, I think most people that know me fairly well know that time management is not my strongest suit. So I feel like usually when I say, oh yeah, I'll be there at 11, you know, I feel like people on the other end are usually like, oh, okay, sure. We'll see you at 11:30 or, you know.
No, I usually add an hour.
No, an hour?
Yeah.
No, I'm not that.
As a window, like a buffer.
You go from like my starting point to like an hour from there.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I give you censored times.
Okay.
I add an hour.
So time management probably would be a great area of weakness. My cousin likes to say...
It would be a weakness that you're really great at.
Yeah. No, my cousin likes to say, my cousin Brandon, he came up with, Brandon, if you're listening, when you first said this term, it totally just, yeah, it hit the nail on the head. You said that we are time optimizers, or I think you said
time optimists.
A time optimist. Yes, that's what he called us. He said people like us have like an hour, you know, before we have to be somewhere. And so we think like, this is amazing. I can get done like 7 things on my to-do list. And that's just not really realistic usually. But for some reason, we don't learn. We haven't given up hope that it's possible. And so on a Saturday, we don't have a ton on the calendar other than like soccer game, garage sale, get together at our house. I'm like, wow, I can get so much done. And so, you know, it's like I'm trying to cram in all these things. And yeah, and it just usually it's not possible, you know?
So are people that are on time, are they time pessimists?
I mean, they frustrate me a lot.
I think they say the same thing about you.
Oh, for sure they do. But when I meet another late person, I feel like, you know, they're from my tribe. They understand me. You know, when people...
A hard time getting anywhere.
I feel like I have a lot of friends who, they show up, like, early to things. And yeah. To me, I'm just like...
That's polite.
I know what... I get it, okay. But it's like, when that happens, it makes me feel like, ugh. Like, I am, like...
Doing something wrong?
No, maybe I feel a little guilty, okay? But I also maybe feel like, listen, I try to get all these things done. And so I feel like I need to give them like the litany of all the things I accomplished, you know, which it makes, that's pretty obnoxious. So I try not to do that too much. But I do feel like I always end up making excuses. But I don't know, that would, okay.
I mean, I would say that it was... that you formed this habit in whenever we lived in Latin America, but that's not true.
You had this habit
way before we lived.
When we lived in Latin America, it totally like
it solidified.
It solidified. Yeah, it grew this weakness in me for sure. Yeah,
it was, affirmed it and made it feel okay.
Yeah,
because as a culture generally. Yeah. Latin cultures are very time fluid.
Yes, exactly. And so I just felt like, this is great.
You felt affirmed.
I felt like I was at home, you know? Like, finally, people that understand me. I'm not offending everyone everywhere I go.
Okay, so you're a time optimist.
That would be a big one. See, so it's a great area of weakness. I'm a time optimist.
Yeah.
But I would also say that, you know, I was just thinking about this today, is I'm feeling not the best, and a friend offered to take the kids, and I'm supposed to just be resting and not doing anything but resting. And for some reason, it is so hard for me to just lay down and rest. Like, I feel like I need to get all the things checked off my to-do list and vacuum, and then I see the floorboards are dirty, and so I start cleaning those, and then I remember... our car has goldfish like crushed everywhere, and so I start vacuuming. So I just start getting all these things done. So I almost feel sometimes like I have to earn the right to relax, which is pretty warped. So
yeah.
Yeah. So that's another thing I'm working on. But enough about me.
No, this next one is for you too.
Well, great.
It's more lighthearted, but it might involve some thinking. So how would you explain the internet, capital I, to a caveman?
Can this caveman speak English?
Yes. In this hypothetical situation, this caveman does speak English.
Okay.
Probably better than you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
What? Better?
I don't know.
That's very offensive.
So how do you explain the internet to a caveman?
There is another cave.
Jeez, that's where you're starting.
It's a cave in cyberspace.
What's cyberspace?
I would say when you look at the stars at night and how there is like a You can't even take me seriously right now. When you look at the stars and you see how there is like an infinite number of stars in the sky, that's how many articles there are out.
that's how many web pages there are.
That's how I would explain it. Could you ever count all of the stars in the sky, caveman? Exactly. Nor could you ever number the articles on Google. It's infinite.
I think this caveman might be more confused after this conversation.
Okay. Than he started. Okay, let's go back to the basics. Let's go back to the basics. It's like, this is a very difficult concept, though.
Yeah.
I would say it's like, basically, and all the information you could ever want to know or find out, like, you can access it through a portal. Again, I don't know if they know that word, but...
Nope, they don't know what a portal is.
Okay, through a screen.
Still lost.
What would you do? I mean, I feel like you're setting me up. You ask me these questions because you're like, you have a good answer for it.
No, yeah. It's just humorous. But this isn't about me.
I know, but...
I'm not the one on the hot seat here.
I know. I just have to remember, everyone who's listening, he never tells me the questions until he asks me and we're recording. And then I feel like I never went to school past second grade because I can't think of anything good.
That's why it's strange people's strange questions.
Just this week, it always is something different.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know how to explain it. Maybe one of our listeners, you know, when we talked about the manhole covers, we had so much feedback. I'm not kidding. I feel like we had like... That proved we had more than one listener because we started getting calls and texts. Some
emails,
people being like, listen, I know the answer. You're wrong.
So we had a couple of different people call in.
About the manhole covers.
Yeah. Text in about the manhole covers. And I agree with them to an extent.
Oh, no. Here we go.
But what the census was is, or consensus was that it's circular so that no matter what way it's faced, it won't ever fall down through the tube.
Yes. Right? Like obviously like an oval rectangle definitely would, but like a square even.
Yeah. If you turn a square sideways, it's smaller and it could fall down through the tube.
Yeah.
Right. But a circle is the same distance across no matter which way you face it.
Yeah.
So I get that argument.
And it's heavy. And so when you like lay it down on top, like you can lay it any which way and it'll fit versus
having to find the right shape.
Right.
I understand
like that. Like a star, which is what I would have picked. But
but the one thing, the one flaw in this concept that we got from multiple people is if the tube that they're going down into is larger than the manhole cover itself,
yeah,
then no matter what way you face or what shape it is, it could still fall down into the tube. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
So if the manhole cover
is
2 feet in diameter,
yes,
but your tube is 3 feet,
yeah, it's going to fall through no matter
then
what.
Then it's going to fall down to the bottom regardless of what shape it is. So I get the logic, but at the same time, I don't. The tube would basically have to be the exact same size or smaller than the manhole cover in order for that logic to track.
Well, that's what happens. That's actually right, though. Like, isn't that what people...
How many manholes have you climbed down into?
Never once have I ever done that. Never have I ever. But I don't want to. But... I mean, I think that is... I mean, enough people have said that I'm thinking that there's some truth to that. And a lot of them have been like math geeks. No offense.
Wow.
No.
You just insulted that was our mean. Listener.
No, I mean, one of them even said it. You know, they were like, you know, I'm a math whiz, which is kind of synonymous with, okay, you're a little geeky, you know. But no name calling here, so.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, we just fact checked.
Yes, we did.
A previous hard question.
Yep.
Well, tune in next time for another episode. We'll see you then.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown. Recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.